May it please the court, my name is John Kindley. I represent, in this case, the appellant defendant, Derek Scott Davey. I would like to note at the outset that I, rather than what it had been noted on the sheet, that I would be reserving 2 minutes for rebuttal rather than the five. And there are two basic issues in this case. The first is, did the district court abuse its discretion when it denied Derek Davey's motion to withdraw? The second basic issue is whether the mandatory minimum sentence of 10 years imposed in this case violated the Eighth Amendment prohibition against cruel and unusual punishment. Addressing the first of these basic issues, and that is, you know, the defendant appellant, Derek Davey, has argued in the briefs before this court that it was an abuse of discretion on the part of the district court to deny his motion to withdraw. And particularly, there were two basic issues that were raised on that motion to withdraw, the denial of which by the district court was an abuse of discretion. The first thing that was advanced in the district court was the actual innocence of Derek Davey. The second issue that was pressed in the court below was the voluntariness of his guilty plea. I'd like to go first to the actual innocence issue that was pressed in the district court below. The district court, in its disposition of that matter, in its opinion, recognized that Derek Davey was stating and affirming that in the telephone conversation that occurred in South Bend, he stated that, "I don't want to meet you." Right? That's what Derek Davey is saying that he said in that conversation, and the district court recognized that that's what he was affirming that he had said in that conversation. The district court denied this aspect, his affirmation of actual innocence, primarily because it said that it contradicted his plea colloquy. Now, the defendant has endeavored in the briefs before the court to demonstrate that, in fact, okay, that this purported ground for rejecting Derek Davey's claims of actual innocence was fundamentally mistaken. Okay, that is, nothing Derek Davey said in his plea colloquy contradicted his assertion that when he made this phone call, his intent was not to meet the alleged girl.
I don't know how we can get anywhere with intents. Mm-hmm. The statute has particular elements, and it looks like the plea colloquy sets out all the elements as the parties and the district judge then understood them. Undisclosed contents of one's head aren't a very good reason for withdrawing a plea. But I'm worried about whether the plea colloquy sets out the elements of the offense.
Yes, Your Honor.
As we have understood them. That is this plea a satisfactory plea under Gladish? And your brief doesn't mention Gladish, but I think this is the opportunity for both sides to discuss it.
Yes, Your Honor. And, in fact, I have reviewed that case, certainly. And I think, in that case, the court made clear that there needs to be something that demonstrates a substantial attempt that is more than just...
The phrase is substantial step.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Yes, substantial step. And that, just mere talk is not enough to demonstrate that. Now, I think it's interesting in Gladish, and I think it's really important here.
Was a Gladish style of argument ever made in the district court in this case?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Was an argument along the lines of Gladish made in the district court in this case?
Well, there was a discussion of that. It wasn't spelled out what the attempt was, what the substantial step constituted. In the district court, in the motion to withdraw originally, there was that argument that was set out. Now, in my briefs, I argue that what we're really getting at here with this intent is really a very similar type thing. And I'd point out that in Gladish, okay, the court said to be guilty of an attempt, you must intend the completed crime, okay, and take a substantial step towards its completion, okay? And that's kind of what I'm getting at with this intent aspect, is that there is no acknowledgement that that was his intent.
As we got into this, when I said the substantial step requirement is totally different from arguments about the undisclosed contents of one's head.
Sure.
The question I just asked is whether an argument along the lines of Gladish was made in the district court. And that the answer can't be he's now denying his intent, because it's a completely different argument.
Okay, Your Honor. I think, in answer to your question, there was a, the attorney in the district court below had said that there was missing an explanation of what the specific attempt was, what constituted
the
attempt.
Did he ever say that things just didn't get far enough, that this was really mere talk along the lines of Gladish, and that the talk in the chat room? Now, of course, this person travels as well, right?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor. However, that wasn't part of the factual basis for the plea, and it's in the contention in the briefs that, there were other things that happened when he traveled too. There was his alleged phone conversation, and I think all those things are really important in this case.
Well, Gladish says there's nothing magic about travel. The travel isn't a sine qua non, I suppose, one way or the other. But on the other hand, if looking at what the plea agreement sets forth, I had understood your argument really to be that it never gets beyond a statement by Mr. Davey that Blonde DT represented itself as a 15-year-old female, but that he doesn't actually say he was taking steps to have an impermissible encounter with such a person.
Right. Your Honor, I would have to acknowledge, in the online conversation, there was an arrangement to meet, and there was discussion of an arrangement to meet. I'm sure
they will. Right, and he travels to South Bend. Right?
Yes, Your Honor. But when he does travel to South Bend, his contention is that the conversation that happened there was, I do not want to meet you. And if what we're getting at here is, people can,
but he doesn't say that to the district court judge. The problem is, is he now entitled to expand on the colloquy that he had with the judge at the time the plea was accepted?
Well, I think that, he has made assertions of actual innocence, and I think in that respect, if especially, when we tie this into the Eighth Amendment, and it is, obviously
there's
a 10-year sentence.
In doing that, the Eighth Amendment argument is frivolous.
Okay.
Did he travel to South Bend? The application of common sense isn't ruled out.
Sure, I understand, Your Honor.
So why did he travel to South Bend?
His,
why did he? Just answer me, please.
He wanted to discourage her from meeting people online,
Do you really believe that?
Absolutely, Your Honor. I think it's a question for
the man is going to drive to South Bend to advise someone who he doesn't know that she shouldn't meet, meet other men and talk to them.
Does your client understand that if he presents that defense at trial, what's going to happen is he loses his reduction for acceptance of responsibility and he will get an enhancement for perjury? He can make himself much worse off than he is now.
Okay.
Does he really want to do that?
Well, Your Honor, he has, this is discussed in the brief, that there are, people can have different states of mind when they are, having a conversation like this, okay?
My question was concrete. Does your client understand that the line of argument he wants to present at trial will get him 5 extra levels under the sentencing guidelines and a good deal more time in prison.
Okay.
Does he understand that?
Did you explain that to him?
He understands that, yes, that he, you know, that...
You explained it to him?
Yes, Your Honor. That's
all right.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Kinley.
Sure, thank you.
Ms. Lowry.
May it please the court, counsel, my name is Leslie Miller Lowry, and I am the assistant United States attorney that was responsible for the Derek Davey case. It's the contention of the United States that, in fact, there was no abuse of discretion on the part of the district court in refusing to grant Mr. Davey's motion to withdraw his guilty plea. It is the belief of the
It is obvious that the district judge, and indeed the entire bench in northern Indiana and the U.S. Attorney's Office, did not anticipate Gladish. Everybody was thinking about this case as one in which mere speech could violate the statute, and we've now held otherwise. So, don't we have a problem?
With regard to the Gladish decision, the Northern District of Indiana is preparing a memorandum for a petition and to petition the court for an en banc hearing to address the issues that were presented in the Gladish opinion. And I, as the assistant, am not certainly privy to or participating in the preparation of that memorandum on...
That's not the question I asked. I didn't ask whether you agreed with Gladish. I asked whether we don't have a problem in this case, given the existence of Gladish.
As the court has decided, as the court sees the elements currently under the Gladish decision, the guilty plea in this case, it's the government's belief that there existed a... Even in the face of Gladish, there existed a factual basis in the plea agreement and in the record as a whole to support the guilty plea in this case.
But looking at the brief that you filed, you've summarized on pages 5 and 6 the factual basis for the plea found in the plea agreement. And as I look at these are all talk, actually. These are the things that Gladish says doesn't go far enough. Now, whether there are other things or, you know, whether we can look at other things, I'm not sure. But just looking at this looks an awful lot like what Gladish said isn't enough.
The factual basis that was contained in the plea agreement, the government contends, is one factor that can be looked at in deciding whether there are factual basis existed. The case law indicates that you can look at the record as a whole to determine whether or not there existed a factual basis. With regard to the specific element of that's addressed in Gladish, and did he go far enough in attempting this crime, if we look at the totality of the record, Mr. Davey admitted or did not pose any objection to a statement in the pre-sentence report indicating that he traveled to South Bend to meet what he thought was a 15-and-a-half-year-old female. And applying common sense to that, he arrived to meet that 15-and-a-half-year-old female after a long series of conversations of a very graphic sexual nature and specific conversations about when to meet and how to meet and what we would do when we meet. So once he arrives there...
So you're saying, number one, we should take into account what's in the PSR, and you also mentioned in your brief this letter that Attorney Zirkle wrote, who I suppose was representing Mr. Davey at the time, in which he alludes to the trip to South Bend to talk to Blondie T.
Yes. The government submits that the court can look at the record as a whole, including the submissions made by Mr. Zirkle on behalf of his client during his representation, as well as statements made in the pre-sentence report, statements that were not objected that Mr. Davey did not object to through
I'm
counsel.
I'm puzzled by this. Rule 11 says the factual basis for the plea has to be set out in open court. And how do we reconcile that with the argument that we instead look to the written plea agreement?
I believe, Your Honor, that it can be reconciled by the fact that the factual basis is generally supplied by the defendant's admissions, but Rule 11F does not require the district court to engage in a colloquy to establish a factual basis for a guilty plea. The court may find a factual basis from anything that appears in the record, which includes the government's proffer. That's United States versus Musa at 946 Fed Second 1297. So while I understand what the court is saying with regard to Rule 11, I believe that Rule 11F allows the court to look at the record as a whole to determine if a factual basis existed. And as the court has decided, Gladish at this point in time, the element of whether he went far enough can be gleaned from other statements and other representations that were made by Davey's counsel during the course of his representation. So when those statements are looked at in determining whether under a Gladish analysis this is a sufficient and viable plea agreement, the United States would submit that the record is viewed as a whole supports a factual basis for the plea agreement, even under the present.
I don't understand what significance you think Rule 11F has. Rule 11F just says that the admissibility of particular documents is governed by Rule of Evidence 410. It doesn't say which things have to be done in open court and which don't.
With regard to Rule 11F, Your Honor, the general course is that during the plea colloquy in open court, the defendant addresses, in making a factual basis, all of the elements of the offense. The case law says that the court may find the factual basis from anything that appears in the record. And although it's true, no one anticipated at the time that Davey came along that the Gladish case would come along, even with that, there's a firm basis in the case law for the court's ability and authority to look outside of the mere statements that were made during the guilty plea colloquy had at the district court level to determine whether there's a factual basis. The statements that the government relies on are statements that were made by his counsel on his behalf during his representation and statements that were not denied when given denied by Davey when given a clear opportunity to do so, and specifically with regard to traveling to South Bend to meet what he thought was a 15-and-a-half-year-old.
I think it would probably be prudent if we received additional submissions from the parties about the effect of Gladish. And I think that we really need you to address whether the requirements of Gladish are satisfied in this case, whether the factual basis of the plea, however it's determined, includes the substantial step required by Gladish, whether the defendant understood the substantial step requirement, that is, his plea may be involuntary if he didn't know that, and third, whether any of these arguments have been forfeited.
Your Honor, in light of
We'll give the parties 14 days to file supplemental memos on that question, on those questions. All arising out of Gladish.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Anything further, Mr. Kindley?
Just very briefly, Your Honor, and this kind of, I think, goes to the questions that were asked before. I mean, one of the primary things that wasn't admitted to by Mr. Davey was a belief that this person was under that age. So in terms of any sort of trial strategy, although that's not what we're dealing with here, that was maybe one of the most prominent things. Under the list of elements under Doyle, even, that says a belief that the person is under 16. you know, my client had talked with a Charles Black, and this is a person who he had said, and there, he wasn't sure. He didn't know whether this person was under 16 or not, is the way he describes what, you know, his situation was. And just addressing, I think you had already brought up the voluntariness in terms of looking at the record as a whole, you know, U.S. Supreme Court and McCarthy, this court and Frye, the real issue is voluntariness. Did the defendant understand what he was pleading to? So I think that's all I have, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.